And we're holding on Kuf Chaf Aleph, Amud Aleph, by on the third line. We had said in the Mishnah, we're talking about what kind of simonim you need to identify a body. And we also talked about how long after the death can they say Eidus before we assume that maybe the appearance of the body or the face has changed. So Tanakama had said 3 days. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava had said not all people are the same because, for example, you have fatter and skinnier people, and not all places, not all times are the same. So you can't say a blanket statement of 3 days. We talked about yesterday, by the way, also that Tosfos discusses, Rabbi Natan says that really this, even according to the Tanakhama, this limit of 3 days is really only when you're talking about that you're based on actual simonim. Or when you don't have, when the face is not intact and you have to rely on simonim or on tvius ayin on the body. Sometimes you can't mention any actual simon, but tvius ayin, I recognize this body at a, or this face at a glance. So we talked about yesterday that that Rabbi Natan says that that no, if you have tvius ayin, then it would be acceptable. Good morning, Ellie. That if you have tvius ayin, it would be acceptable even after more than 3 days. Only when you're talking about simonim, then we would say that you're limited to 3 days. And again, we said that most of the other Rishonim disagree with Rabbeinu Tam on that point. And they say that whether we're talking about Tvias Ayin, whether we're talking about Simonim, either way, the limit is 3 days. Anyway, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava was saying, is saying not necessarily 3 days, because it depends on the person and it depends on the time and place. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava l'kula polig or l'chumra polig? Is Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava arguing l'kula, saying that the Tanakhama is saying the maximum is always 3 days, and Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava is saying that no, sometimes you can go beyond 3 days if, let's say, it's a skinny person and cold weather. Or the Chumra polyg, or on the contrary, is he arguing the Chumra, where the Tanakhama is saying you always have up to 3 days, and Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava would be saying that sometimes you don't even have as much as 3 days. In fact, Tosfos says that the Gemara could have asked that maybe it's both. Maybe it's both the Kuba or the Chumra. In other words, the 3 days doesn't even begin at all. Each one would have to be done on a case-by-case basis. Anyway. So the Gemara says, Toshma, Gahu gavra the Tova b'Karmi. There was a man who drowned in a place called Karmi. Vasku abehedi al bosit plus in Yemen. They pulled his body out of the water in a different place called Barhedia, and it was after 3 days. Ba'ansivar Rabdivi Menahadar l'divesu. And Rabdivi Menahadar allowed the guy's wife to remarry on the basis of Edim recognized the body, and they were able to say that it was him. The two, how who gavra the itba b'diglas. There was another person who drowned in the Diglas, which is the Chideko River. Vaskuhu agishu de Shabistana. They pulled his body out of the water by the Shabistana bridge, which is further downstream on the Chideko. The ansava Rava la devesu apuma de Shushvini. Rava followed the testimony of Shushvinin. Shushvinin are really close friends of his. In particular, we find in Gemara and Baba Basra that Shushvinin are part of like a compact that a group of friends will have between themselves, where I'll help you with your, we will all help you with your wedding expenses, and you'll invite us to the wedding. And in return, when each of us in turn gets married, then each of us will contribute towards your wedding, and you'll invite us and so forth. So Shushvinin and then are really close friends, so they'd recognize him. So Rava got testimony from Shushvinin, and he allowed the wife to remarry, even though Labos Chamisha, you know what I mean? Even though it was 5 days since the person had drowned. Now, So in both these cases, we're saying it was after 3 days. So Iyamet Bishlema Lakula Polig. So if you say Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava is arguing Lakula, the Tanakhama is saying maximum always 3 days. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava is saying sometimes you can go further. Inu Da'avid Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. Then fine, that explains what happened. They're following Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava's opinion. He's a Tana. They're, even though he's a Das Yochid, sometimes we find the halacha is like a Das Yochid. So they're allowed to follow his opinion, to be mat to this woman, to be mat to these people's wives. Eli, I'm at l'chum r'polig. But if you say Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava is arguing l'chumra, and the Tanakhama is saying always maximum 3 days. And Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava is saying, no, it can never go beyond 3 days, but sometimes it can be less. Inu da'ovid kaman. then who would Rav Dimi Min HaHada or Rava respectively be following? They have to have some tana that they're following. So obviously, doesn't that show that Rav Yehuda ben Rava is going Lakula? And the answer is, the Gemara says, not necessarily, because shiny maya b'tzamsi, because it's different when they're in water. In both these cases, the person drowned, and water tends to fix the face in position and prevent it from swelling up like this. In other words, a body that's sitting out in the open, after a while it starts decaying and it starts swelling up, and therefore the face, the shape and the contours and whatever of the face may change. But when it's in water, then that prevents that from happening. That preserves the body for longer, or that preserves the face for longer. So therefore, there may be less of an issue with it. So the Gemara says, "V'ha'amet mayim marzumaka." Didn't we talk about yesterday? We said, on the contrary, that water makes a wound worse. We talked about a case. We said where you have a person has lost their leg. Where we said that if they lost it above the knee, then we say it makes them a trefa. And we said that even though there's a possibility that even though if it was on land, they might be able to survive it for longer, but in water, then no, because that would make it worse. So you're telling me that water makes things worse, not better. And the answer is hani mili heich de ikamaka. The answer is that's when there's a wound, then the water makes it worse, then the water gets into it, and therefore makes it swell up and makes the person more likely to die of it. Avalhech the lekamaka, but when there's no wound, mitzmas tzomis, then just the opposite, the water helps prevent decay and prevent the swelling up that you would otherwise have in a body. So again, according to most Rishonim, this applies to, we said yesterday that most Rishonim learn you have to be able to recognize the face. We said in the Mishnah yesterday, unless maybe if you have simonim muvhokim, if you have really unique simonim on the body, then fine, we can follow those. But then again, it'll depend whether there's a wound or not. According to Rabbeinu Tam, we're talking about that. If there's no wounds on the face, then Rabbeinu Tam says there's no question that it would be even long after 3 days. It doesn't really change that much. It's only really when we're talking about simonim on the body that there would be an issue between before and after 3 days. Tosfos there also, by the way, discusses the question, what if you're not sure whether it was 3 days or more than 3 days? In both of these cases in the Gemara, we know when the person drowned, we know when they got his body out of the water, so we know how many days it was. But what happens, it could be that you come across a body and you don't know how many days it was since he died. You have to, forensic investigation. So there have been a time, again, in that same Tosfos, and Daf Kochof learns that you could be makel on that and say that you could assume that it might be within 3 days, and therefore, if they recognize the body, that's good enough. Again, many Rishonim disagree with that. And say that this one, unlike the one about recognizing the face versus the body and simonim versus tviyas ayin, where in Shulchan Aruch it mentions the opinion of Rabbi Tam and says that most Rishonim disagree with him. With this one, it just brings both opinions that if you have a suffix of 3 days, then it's still acceptable, and yesh omrim that not. So going back to our Gemara over here on Kufaf Aleph then, so again, since in these cases, we're not talking about there were any injuries on the body was drowned in the water, then therefore the water will preserve it for longer, and therefore Rava and Rav Dimi Min HaHada could say that it's possible to recognize the body, to recognize the face, even after 3 days. But the Gemara says, "V'hani mili dechi aske chazia b'shaite." Now, all that would only apply, though, if as soon as they got the body out of the water, they saw it very shortly afterwards and gave edus. Aval ishtahi. But if then they leave the body for a while before the edim come, mitbach topach. Meanwhile, it will swell up after you get it out of the water. So then it'll start swelling up, and then the features will start changing. And therefore you won't be able to recognize it as well. So in these cases, it would have to be that the Edom were there right when they pulled the body out of the water. with all these things, with what we're going to talk about in the next Mishnah and the Gemara on it, there's a huge amount of literature on it. First of all, the Siman in Shulchan Aruch that talks about these dinim is extremely long. Siman Yud Zayin and Evan Ezer is extremely long and goes through many different scenarios. Second of all, you have a huge amount of literature in Shiloh Satrovis that goes through these kinds of things about dinim of identifying bodies and when Eidos on a person's death is acceptable and when not, which is going to be the subject of the next piece, of the next two Mishnayos and the Gemara on them, and all sorts of things like that. There's an expression that the post can bring that a Rav who's matu in Aguna is ke'ilu bona achas mechorvis Yerushalayim, is as if he rebuilt one of the ruins of Yerushalayim. So it's a tremendous mitzvah, and therefore Sarabonim throughout the generations would always be looking for ways to be able to manage that within the parameters of the halachas that we're learning over here in these Gemaras. So the Mishnah continues. Nafalamayim, if the person fell into water, bein sheyesh lahen soif, bein she'ein lahen soif, whether the water has an end or does not have an end, and we'll see soon in the Gemara what mayim sheyesh lahem soif and she'ein lahem soif is. Either way, ishtay asura, either way his wife is asur, because he might have gotten out of the water someplace else, or he might have survived in an underground cavern near the water, as we'll see in the Gemara. But Rav Meir says not so. And Rav Meir says as a proof, Rav Meir says, you see, for example, there's an example of a person who fell into the great pit. So this would be a large hole in the ground that was filled with water, that they would have, that people would use it for their water supply. And there was a person who fell in there, and after 3 days being in there, he still got out and he was alive. So you see that a person could survive even in the water for 3 days. They could be treading water, they could be, they could find like an underground, they could find an underground place, etc. We'll see in the Gemara why the Chachamim do not accept that, why the Chachamim do not accept that that logic. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi says it happened that there was a blind man who went down to Tovel in a cave. The Yorad Moshe Yachrav, the one who was pulling him along, went along with him. In other words, the person who was blind was not able; he couldn't see where he was going, so he had somebody to lead him to, from one place to another. And they went into the cave, and they never came out. The Shohu Kadesha Tetze Napsham. So they waited long enough that they couldn't possibly have survived, that they must have been underwater long enough that they couldn't possibly still be alive. But he see was Nishesayim, and they allowed their wives to remarry. So Rabbi Yossi is saying that there's a limit how long a person could stay in the water. Now, in this case, it was a cave, for example. If they came out of the water, then any observers would see them. So in other words, the beginning of the Mishnah said that it doesn't matter whether the water has yesh lahem soif or ein lahem soif. Now the Gemara is going to explain that yesh lahem soif means that when you're standing in one place, you can see all of the banks, all of the shores of the body of water. So now, if the person came out from the water anywhere, then you would see him because you can see all the shores of it. That's called mayim sheyesh lahem soif. So the cave that we're talking about is an example of Mayim Sheyesh Lahem Soif. On the other hand, Mayim She'ein Lahem Soif is a larger body of water where it's so large you can't see from one end to the other. So therefore, there's the possibility that maybe the person actually floated to a different part of it and got out of the water there. So Reb Meir was saying in the beginning of the Mishnah that it doesn't matter the size of the body of water. Either way, there's a possibility that somehow they survive. Even the Gemara is going to say on Omid Beis, maybe even B'derech Nes, whereas Rabbi Yossi is saying that not. You see from this example of the cave that once they were in the water long enough that they couldn't possibly have survived, this blind man and his guide, then we allow their wives to remarry, and we're not concerned about, as the Gemara is going to say, that there might be like an underground cavern that has air in it that they might have survived for reasons that we'll see in the Gemara. So Rabbi Yossi says, you see that if it's Mayim Sheyesh Lahem Soif, then it's fine to allow to say that the person is dead and say that his wife can be married. And Rabbi Yossi continues, v'shuv ma'aseh be'esya, it happened also in Esya, which is a part of Turkey nowadays, v'echad sheshuv sheluhu layam, there was a person who, we talked about this yesterday in the Gemara, a person, they lowered him into the sea, v'loy also b'yadim el ragloy, later on, all they pulled out of him was his leg, Omru Chachamim. So the Chacham said, we have to see how far up the leg was detached. In other words, the assumption would be, in other words, that the shark came and ate him, or that he drowned and his leg broke off, or whatever. Anyway, Omru Chachamim, in how kubo l'mayla tinase, if the leg is broken off above the knee, tinase, then she's allowed to remarry, because an injury like that, as we talked about yesterday, a person is not going to survive for very long. And in fact, we said the water would make things even worse. So therefore, you can be sure that he's going to die pretty soon. But if it's below the knee, then his wife can't remarry because he might survive such an injury. And again, since it was in the yam, which is mayim she'en lam soif, then we would say there's the possibility that maybe he got out of the water someplace else. So the Gemara starts off, Tana Rabbanan, Nafal Mayim, if a person falls into water, Ben Sheyesh Lahem Soif, Ben Sheyesh Lahem Soif, Ishtei Asura, Divrei the Meir. So the Meir is saying his wife is Asur. Now, the point of this is, in the Mishnah, in our Mishnah, we started with a statement that an anonymous statement saying Ishtei Asura, and then Omer the Meir, and then the Meir brings this proof from a person who fell into the Bor HaGadol. So the Braisa is making it clear that all of that is part of the Meir's statement. The Meir is saying that even if it's mayim sheyesh lahem soif, as for example with the Bor HaGadol, which is you stand on one side of it, you can see all the way across, you can see to all the sides of it, then nevertheless your mayor is saying a person could survive in there, and therefore ishtei asura divrei the mayor. So the mayor would say his wife is also to remarry, even though we haven't found him, because maybe he is in fact alive. The Chum said there's a difference whether the water has a soif or not. So hey, chidami mayim sheyesh lahem soif. What do we mean by mayim sheyesh lahem soif? Amar Abaye, kol she'oymed v'roya ma'abur ruchoysav. When you can stand in one vantage point and see all four sides of it. So you can see all the banks and all the shores of it. And therefore, so once you wait long enough that the person could not, once you wait long enough that the person couldn't possibly have survived under the water, then if he actually came out of the water, you would see him, because you can see all the shores of this lake or whatever, or body of water or whatever. Therefore, we know that the guy is for sure dead. As opposed to, if it's Mayim Shein Lam Soif, you never know, he might have floated or swum to a different part of it out of your vantage point and gotten out. So the Gemara gives an example. How gavra the tava ba'agma de Santi. There was once a man who drowned in Agma de Santi, which is a lake. So it was a lake. Unlike we're talking in the Gemara so far, for the example that we had, the example we had in the Mishnah, for example, of Rabbi Yossi talking about the story that happened in Asya of the person who they lowered into the water, and then afterwards they found only his leg. That was the Mediterranean Sea, which is near Turkey. So that is that's not a lake. That's a sea. Where the water, there's a current in it. But here we're talking about there was a lake where there's no current in it. So there was a man who drowned in there. Ansavot of Shila Ludvesu, and of Shila allowed his wife to remarry on the basis of Edim who saw him fall in there. Now, Agma de Samki, on the one hand, it's a lake, it has no current. On the other hand, it's too big to be Mayim Shein Lahem Sut, to be Mayim Sheyesh Lahem Sut. So, on the face of it, of Shila did wrong. So Rav says to Shmuel, we should put him in Cherem, because he's going against what the Chachamim are saying of him. How could he be matter this woman when on the basis of a drowning in Mayim Shein Lam Seif? What if the guy got out safely someplace else? So Shmuel says, let's not jump the gun. Let's first send him a message and find out what he was thinking. So they sent a message to Rav Shila, and they asked him, tell us, Mayim She'en Lahem Soif Ishtei Asura in the Teres. If a person drowns, if a man drowns in Mayim She'en Lahem Soif, is his wife Asur or Mutter? Sholach Lohu Ishtei Asura. So he sends back, yeah, the Halacha is the wife is Asur. So they send him back, Nu, Agma de Samki Mayim She'esh Lahem Soif, or Mayim She'en Lahem Soif. What is Agma de Samki? Is it Mayim She'esh Lahem Soif or Ein Lahem Soif? Omelahu, Sholach Lohu, so he sent back to them, Mayim She'en Lahem Soif. It's Mayim Shein Lam Soif. Well, in that case, then Rav Shila is in effect agreeing with them that he shouldn't have been matir this man's wife. So the question is, my time of it. So they ask him then, so why'd you do that? Why would you matir this guy's wife if this place is Mayim She'en Lahem Soif and you're not supposed to? So he says, mita te'ina. So Rav Shila says, because I made a mistake in the halacha. I made a mistake in the application of the halacha. Ano sabi, I figured at first that the definition of Agma Desamki is in fact Mayim She'yesh Lahem Soif. I thought, given the kovu v'kaimi, since the water in Agma Desamki remains in place, there's no current over there with water flowing in and out, I thought, K'mayim she'yesh lahem soif. So I thought that that would be like Mayim She'yesh Lahem Soif, because I figured, in other words, that since it's one thing when the body of water has a current, so you might have, for example, imagine the guy is unconscious and the current takes him from one place to another in the body of water, and then he winds up deposited on the shore someplace else out of your sight. I figured, says Rav Shila, it's different with a body of water that has no current, like this Agma Desamki. There's no current to take him from one place to another. Therefore, wherever he drowned is probably where he stayed. The loyhi, but in fact, that's not so. And Rav Shila is saying, I myself realized the mistake. Kibin de ikka gali, because after all, there are waves in this Agma Desamki, because even though there's no current, there's still the water still ruffles, the wind still ruffles the water and creates waves. It's very possible then that the waves brought him down, that the waves moved him from one place to another while he was unconscious, and therefore conceivably he could have wound up on the shore someplace else out of sight. So in other words, yes, it was wrong to be matir this guy's wife on the basis of that. So it comes out that Rav had the right intuition that after all it was also, and it turns out Rav Shila was mistaken. So Kori Shmuel alei de Rav lo yu'una l'tzadik kol oven. So Shmuel applied to Rav the pasuk, no wrong thing will befall the tzaddik. That, in other words, that Rav did not jump the gun and go put Rav Shila in Cherem, where in fact it turns out that Rav Shila, he was mistaken in his application of the halacha, but he didn't do it deliberately, so it wouldn't have been appropriate to put him in Cherem. So Shmuel applies to Rav, Hashem brought it about, Bashkacha brought this, that I was there to tell you to ask Rav Shila first for the circumstances, and that way you avoided the serious avera of putting someone in Cherem when you're not supposed to. Kori Rav alei to Shmuel, it's true of a Rav Yoyetz. And in turn, Rav applied to Shmuel, the Pasuk, there's salvation comes with many advisors. In other words, Hashem made it, the Siyata Dishmaya, that you were around to advise me to not jump the gun and put Rav Shila in Chayim. Now, though, an interesting point in it still is that after all, Rav Shila was also a tzaddik. Does it mean that Hashem brought it about that Rav Shila actually was matir and Eishes Ish when he shouldn't have? So Ben Yehoyada over here actually brings a number of interesting cases where there were chachamim in later generations who argued about heter aguna. He brings an example, for example, one time the Beis Yosef and the Nama were arguing about a particular heter aguna. The Beis Yosef said that we don't have evidence that the guy's dead, so his wife is osur. The Rama says she is mutter. So the Ben Yehoyada tells the Magid, the Beis Yosef had a malach called the Magid, who would come and tell him various things, various sodas atoda or whatever. So he came and explained to the Beis Yosef that actually, in a way, both of you were right. The based on the edus that we had, it's true that wasn't enough to say that the woman should be mutter, like you're saying. However, because the Ramah is a tzaddik, Hashem wouldn't allow a takola to happen through him, Hashem arranged that the guy actually died someplace else before the heter actually took effect, before the Ramah actually gave the heter. So therefore it comes out, and in reality, the guy was dead, and therefore the Eibishter arranged that the Ramah didn't end up making a terrible mistake. And he gives several other examples. So in other words, the same way over here, you could say that the fact that in fact he was dead, there's not enough evidence in halacha to say that he's dead, but nevertheless, it's still in real actuality he was, and therefore when his wife remarries, then it's not a mark against Rav Shila's record. The Rama went around the Beis Yosef, whether the Beis Yosef lived in Eretz Yisrael, the Rama in Poland, but they communicated by letter. They were in touch a lot by letter, yeah. Yeah, in fact, the Ramah was a soaker. He wrote a Sefer Torah and sent it to the Beis Yosef. Yeah. Yeah.
But the Ramah only found the Beis Yosef after the whole
period. No, he knew of the Beis Yosef before that. What it was is, I mean, we don't have really time to get into this in such length, but yeah, what happened was the Ramah was the Beis Yosef was told also by his Magid that the Ramah is about to write something along the lines of what the Beis Yosef himself is going to write, the Shulchan Aruch. And therefore, he should hurry up and finish it before the Ramah preempts him. And so he did. He published his Shulchan Aruch. And then the Ramah realized, well, I've been preempted. So therefore, he wrote the notes on it, which are the Hagos and Ramah that we have in Shulchan Aruch. There were printing presses then. This is in the mid-1500s. Yeah. Let's go on. We can talk history later. Okay.
All I want to talk about is this. Okay, go ahead.
Onward. Tanya. Omer Rebbe. Maisa b'shnei b'nei odem mechamrin machmorin b'yardin. It happened once that two people were spreading nets to catch fish in the Yarden. One of them went into a fish hole. Namely, Rashi explains that sometimes you have under the water, you get to the edges of the water, you get to the banks of the river or the body of water of whatever kind it is, and underneath the bank, you have the fish will dig out a burrow over there where the top of that ends up being so you'll have most of it is filled with water, but you'll have an airspace at the top of it underground that has air that's above the water line. So one person went in there, the shokachama, the loyal piskacha. So he was in there trying to catch fish. The sunset, he wasn't able to see the entrance of the mechila to be able to get out. He had gotten in while it was still daylight, and there was enough sunlight filtering in through the water for him to see this mechila in the first place. But by the time he was ready to go out, it was dark, and he couldn't find his way. The other one waited on the banks of the Yarden long enough that the person couldn't possibly have survived underwater. And he went to the person's house to inform them that he's dead. The next day, the sun shone. The first fisherman found the entrance of the mechila that he had come in. So he came back home. He finds tremendous wailing and mourning going on in his house. They thought he was dead. All of a sudden, he turns up alive. So Rebbe says, you see from this how great are the words of the Chachamim. You see, they would have thought, the aide thought, how could he possibly survive? It didn't even occur to them that there could be a Mechila Shel Dagim and he could survive in there all night. So by the same token then, this is exactly why the Chachamim are saying that Mayim She'en Lahem Soif, that Mayim She'en Lahem Soif, the woman is also, because you never know, he might have gotten out someplace else out of our sight, but there might even be a Mechila Shel Dagim under the edges of the water. So the Gemara asks, "Yehachi Mayim Sheyesh Lahem Soif Nami Leichush LeMechila Shel Dagim?" Well, wouldn't the same thing apply to Mayim Sheyesh Lahem Soif? So why are we saying that Mayim Sheyesh Lahem Soif, if there was long enough that he couldn't survive, then his wife is in fact mutter? What if there was a Mechila Shel Dagim there? And the answer is Mayim Sheyesh Lahem Soif Mechila Shel Dagim LeShchita. In Mayim Sheyesh Lahem Soif, it's not that common to have this Mechila Shel Dagim. So therefore, there's nothing there. Therefore, there's nothing to worry about. But when there's Mayim She'en Lahem Soif, there may well be a Mechila Shel Dagim, as we see in this example. Another example. So the Gemara says, Omer, so before we have more examples, the Gemara says, Omer Ravashi, Hod Omer Rabbanan Mayim She'en Lahem Soif Ishtei Asura. This that the Chachamim are telling us, that if there's Mayim She'en Lahem Soif, that his wife remains Asur, Hani Mili Be'inish Da'alma. Ravashi says that only applies to a regular person. So in other words, because what could happen is he may have gotten out someplace else. So either he got out still conscious, and maybe for all we know, maybe he ran off and decided to start a new life, or maybe he was unconscious and they pulled him out of the water someplace else and revived him, but they have no idea who he is. And he forgot. Let's say he forgot. First of all, he could still be in a coma, so they may not be able to ask him. But yeah, you could also have, let's say, where he forgot. Avil serve him in Abonon Loi, but Ravashi says, if he's a Tamat Chacham, then no, because Edis Solik Kola Islay, because if he got out of the water, there would be a coil, because a Tamat Chacham is well known, and people there'll be people who recognize him.
They were like movie stars.
Yeah, I guess you could say they were celebrities. Yeah, they were celebrities. So therefore, yeah. So therefore, there'd be a coil, and therefore we don't have to worry that he might have gotten out, and nobody knows who he is. However, the Gemara says, "V'loihi," it's not so. What Rav Ashi is saying, "Loishna inish da'alma v'loishna tzurva me'rabbanon." The eved ein lachatchila loy. Doesn't matter either way. But the eved, if the wife gets remarried, we're not going to force her to get divorced. However, we're not going to lachatchila allow her to get married on the basis of a drowning in mayim she'ein lahem soif, because as we're saying, he might have gotten out someplace else. With that said, by the way, there are poskim, and you can find Shalos Atrubas on the subject, that maybe nowadays it's a little bit different. Nowadays, that you have, for example, first of all, people have ID, and second of all, so in that sense, like everybody is more well known than they were then. And second of all, it's much harder to disappear. And like just start a new life someplace else. So some achronim talk about maybe the possibility that nowadays it's different. And nowadays, if you find after a certain significant amount of time, if you know that a person was in a certain place and there's a very small likelihood they got out alive, examples are, for example, there's a shaila. There are shailas that are written in that connection about people about women whose husbands were on the Titanic. There was you're familiar with the website Hebrew Books, where you have 50,000 Sfarim. They actually started with their original mission statement was to publish Sfarim by American Rabbanim that were out of print and nobody would know of otherwise. One of the earliest ones that they published was a Tshuva by a Rav. He was this person, Meskin, his name was. He was a Rav in someplace in Ukraine or other. And then he came to the United States and became a Rav in Burlington, Vermont. And he has, in his Shilas Atrovas, one that he discussed this question of a man who had been on the Titanic. And when we never heard of him again, can we allow his wife to be married? And one of the points he brings in is that nowadays it's much harder to disappear like that. This is 100 years ago, right? Similarly, it was over 100 years ago. No, it was in 1912. Similarly, you have similar things were brought up, for example, as far as September 11th. You had, unfortunately, some people who were killed there. The bodies disintegrated. They didn't find anything, but still, yeah. So it's very complicated. And again, you know, Kila Bonim Echurbis Yerushalayim, Rabbanim will bend over backwards to be able to try to find any heterim to be able to be matir within the parameters of what we're saying to you in Halach.
The guy could be in witness protection.
No, anyway. Tanya, we learn in a braisa, Omer Rav Gamliel, Pama Chaseisa Mahalach B'Sfina. One time I was traveling on a ship, V'ra'isi Sfina Achas Shenishbara. I saw another boat broke up and sank. I was very upset because I knew that there was a Tamad Chacham on that ship. And the Gemara interjects, "Umanu Rabbi Akiva." That Tamad Chacham, who Rabbi Gamliel knew was on that ship, was Rabbi Akiva. So I felt really bad. Rabbi Akiva must have drowned. But Uchshalisi Bayabasha. But Rabbi Gamliel continues, "When I came up to dry land, Baba Yosha Badan Lafana Bahalacha." He came and sat and was discussing halacha in front of me. So obviously he survived the shipwreck. So I asked him, "My son, who brought you out of the water?" Amali tells me, "Daf shall spin in his damanli." I found a plank of wood from the ship. So I held on to it. And as each wave came over me to wash over me, I shook my head at it. So like it went over my head and then went away. And I was able to, so I was able to breathe between waves, basically. So from this, by the way, the Chachamim learn a lesson in life. If the Rishayim are attacking a person, let him bend his head towards them. In other words, let him, Rashi says, let him think to himself, okay, you know what, these guys right now have the upper hand. Let me not go and try to fight forcefully against them, but rather just be willing to bend down, right, and accept that right now they're in power, and therefore I'm not going to be able to fight openly against them, and then they'll wash over you, and then they'll go their way.
Coming, you go under the wave.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much the same idea. In fact, Marshall refers over here to his explanations on the Gemara in Bava Basra, where the Gemara talks about over there about gigantic waves that threaten to swamp the whole world. Where the wave, the stories of Rabbi Baba Chana. So So Maharshal explains that the waves symbolize the goyim who are always threatening to overwhelm us. And what do? We near we act submissively towards them, not when it comes to Torah and mitzvahs, of course, but when it comes to Mili D'Alma, and eventually they wash away and they disappear and we're still here. So we learned this lesson from how Rabbi Akiva acted. Amarti, Sir Ramil continues, so I said, Amarti, Ba'oz HaShoah, so I said at that time, Kamak Dodam, Divrei Chachamim, look how great are the words of the Chachamim, Shamu Mayim Sheyesh Lehem Seif Muteres, Mayim Shein Lehem Seif Asura, who said that she's Mutter only if it's Mayim Sheyesh Lehem Seif, but not Shein Lehem Seif, because after all, here it was Mayim Shein Lehem Seif, the pastors were talking about it was in the Mediterranean, and you would think, how could a person possibly survive such a shipwreck? And yet Rabbi Akiva did. So therefore, so you see that you never know with Mayim Shein Lehem Seif, he might have gotten out safely. Similarly, in the next generation, Tanya Omer Rabbi Akiva, Pamach Asisi Mahalach B'Sfina, one time Rabbi Akiva says, I was traveling on a ship, I saw another ship was being tossed around in the sea. There was a storm. I was very concerned about a Tamar Chacham who I knew was on that boat, Umanu Rameir, namely Rameir. But then when I got off the boat and went to the country of Kaputkia, which is a part of Turkey nowadays, so he came and sat and discussed halacha in front of me. So he survived the shipwreck. So I asked him, my son, who brought you out of the water? Omali tells me, one wave threw me to the next one, and the next wave through to the next one, until it spit me out onto dry land. So as Rabbi Akiva was saying, the waves were washing over him and he needed a plank to hold on to, here the mayor was saying the waves themselves helped him and threw him from one to the next. Amarti, Baruch Hashem. So again, Rabbi Akiva says, I said to myself at that time, Kamak Dodam, Divrei Chachamim, Shama Mayim Sheyesh Lehem Seif, Ishtei Muteres, Mayim Shein Lehem Seif, Ishtei Asura. Because you never know, you could have a person could be tossed from one wave to another like Rabbi Meir was. I saw once, by the way, a drush on the previous part when we said daf shall spin in his damenly. So we see, in other words, that Rabbi Akiva was saved by holding on to a daf. So that gives us a certain chizuk that when we're every day we hold on to the daf, that's the centerpiece of that, it should be at least the centerpiece of our day, and that helps us keep our heads above the waves of the Mayim Rabim of the in Chizidus it talks about that Mayim Rabim refers to the tirdus of Parnasa, the trouble of making a living. So you hold on to the daf, and that gives you your anchor to be able to be safe with all of that. Anyway, going back to the Gemara, Tana Rabbanan, Nafal Legoiv Arroyes Ein Me'idinova. If a person fell into a pit full of lions, you can't say Eidos on him that he's dead, because as the Gemara is going to say later, the lions might not be hungry. But if you fell into a ditch full of snakes or scorpions, then you could say Eidos on him, because then inevitably they're going to bite. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira says that no, we have to be concerned that maybe he's a snake charmer, so he knows how to charm them and prevent them from harming him, and therefore not necessarily is he going to die there in the pit. By the way, when they say about Yosef, you know, the pit that they threw him in, based on our Gemara, Mefoshim explained, obviously they didn't know that they're on Nechoshim Ba'akrabim in there, because the whole point was Reuven is telling them throw him in the pit so that he doesn't die, and Reuven secretly figures to himself that he's going to pull him out of there. If they knew there was Nechoshim Ba'akrabim in there based on our Gemara, then that wouldn't work. So therefore it has to be they didn't know there were Nechoshim Ba'akrabim in there. Although there is an explanation, I think from the Ramban, but I'm not sure, that says maybe even they did know, but Reuven figured that Hashem should interfere with their Bechira Chafshis to kill Yosef is a very rare thing. Hashem very rarely interferes with Bechira Chafshis. On the other hand, he figured if Yosef really is a tzaddik, then yes, Hashem can protect him from the snakes and scorpions, because that's like a lesser ness that Hashem could do. Anyway, the Tanakama, so what is the Tanakama answer to that? Isn't it possible the guy's a snake charmer? True, but the Tanakhama says, Agav Itzitza, because of the pressure, because after all, he's standing on them here and there, Mazkule, so because of that, even a charmer is not going to be able to, they're naturally going to lash out to protect themselves, and therefore he's going to get bitten. As opposed to when he's in a lion's den, he's not standing on top of the lions, and if the lions aren't hungry, then he may get out of it safely. Tosfos actually brings from Yerushalmi that says that in both cases, you can't say Eidus on him because maybe a nest happened to him, like Daniel. But all Gemara is not taking that view. So the Gemara continues, Tana Rabbanan, Nafal sech kivshana esh, if a person fell into a fiery pit, the Idinolov, they can say Eidus on him that he's dead, because obviously, you know, unless there's mice in Nisim. So again, Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi that maybe a nest happened to him, like Hanani Mishol Bazalia, but all Gemara is not following that. But if he fell into a vat full of hot wine or hot oil, which is boiling on the fire, also they can say Eidus on him because he'll definitely get burnt to death. On the other hand, they said in the name of Rav Acha, not necessarily. True that if he falls into a vat of boiling oil, they can say Eidus, because there's no way he could survive that. Because the fire is just going to burn hotter and hotter. Even if when he falls in, some of the oil splashes on the fire, it's just going to make the fire bigger. So therefore, no question, he's going to get burnt. Shel Yayin, on the other hand, Rav Acha says, if it was a vat full of boiling wine, ein me'idin olav, then you can't say Eidus on him that he's dead, and Peshu Mechabe. Because after all, what happens when some of the wine splashes on the fire, it may put it out. So he may actually, so it may not be too hot for him. Omruloi, the Chacham answered Rav Acha, Chilosim Mechabe, true, at first, if any wine splashes on there, it puts out the fire, but it ends up burning even more strongly than before, because that's how it is. A lot of times you splash a little liquid on a fire, it temporarily lessens the fire, but afterwards it just roars back even more strongly than before. So the same way, even if some of the wine splashes on the logs or the charcoal or whatever that's burning the fire underneath on the source of heat, nevertheless, it's still going to burn just as strongly and more strongly than before. And if the guy's not able to get out of there, then yes, he's going to die. Continues the Gemara. We said in the Mishnah, Amar Meir Ma'is Be'echad Shenafal LeBor HaGadol. Before, it happened once that a person fell into the Bor HaGadol and he was still alive and came out of there after 3 days. So you see, says Reb Meir, that even though Ma'im should Yesh Lahem Soif, we should say we can't say for sure that the person is dead. Amar Tanya, we learned a Braisa. Amar Le'Ler Meir Ein Maskir and Ma'is Nisim. You can't mention Nisim. It's in that case. Even if fine, you're going to say that he might have been able to hold his head above water. There's a different reason that the Gemara is going to say in a minute that he couldn't have survived in there 3 days unless a nes had happened to him. So a nisim is something else. So again, Tosfos says that now when we had a braisa. Before that said that we don't worry about nisim, that we say, for example, that if he fell into nechosh v'akrabim or into fire, then we can be made on him. So Tosfos says, according to the Yerushalmi's understanding of it, Reb Meir would actually be arguing with the Maharshal says that the Chachamim here would be arguing with that braisa previously, whether we rely on ma'is and nisim or not. But here we're saying that the Reb Meir is mentioning ma'is and nisim, and the Chacham are saying in maskir and ma'is and nisim. Well, the question is, my ma'is and nisim. What exactly is the ma'is and nisim that you're saying that a nes would have been required for him to survive? Ilema de la ochel v'le ishti. Are you talking about that? Now, obviously, we're not saying, in other words, that his head would have been below the water the whole time. Because if it was, obviously, yeah. I mean, we're not even talking about that. Even Reb Meir is not going that far. Reb Meir is saying, assuming that he was able to keep his head above water every now and then in order to be able to breathe, then there's another, then whatever else he experienced during those 3 days usually would have been fatal, but in this case, a nes happened to him. And the Chacham was saying, ein maskir nice and nisim. So the question is, what is that nes? You're telling me that during those 3 days, he didn't eat or drink. Can't be. You find in Megillas Esther, where Esther tells Mordechai to have the Jewish people fast for 3 days and not eat and not drink. The Gemara over here evidently is assuming that they fasted 3 days straight. So a person could live without food or water for 3 days. Now, I mean, he's in a pit of water. It's not like he couldn't have drunk from the water. The pashtus, we're assuming that he was unconscious. No, but I mean, well, it was a burr, so it had water in it. It had drinking water in it. But pashtus, I guess we could assume that during the 3 days, the person was unconscious. So we see that Esther is telling them to fast for 3 days straight. Now, there are mafoshim on Megillas Esther who say that maybe she was telling them only to fast by night and not by day. So in that case, there's no proof from it. But our Gemara obviously is assuming that she meant literally 3 days straight, 72 hours. There is such an opinion that she had them only fast by night and then break their fast by day. Some of the Mephoshim, they say that. Yeah. Anyway, so obviously then, but if we take it at face value, that in fact they were fasting 3 days straight, then you see that's possible. So you're going to say that he didn't sleep. So maybe it's not that we're talking about that he was unconscious, because then unconscious is sleeping. So, okay, I guess we're assuming that he was awake, but even he could maybe drink some of the water, but still that wouldn't necessarily, but still, so we're saying you don't even need that. Even if he couldn't eat for 3 days, that's still, he could still survive that, as we see with Esther. So you're going to say it's that he couldn't sleep. Rabbi Yochanan says that if a person makes a shvur that I won't sleep for 3 days straight, then automatically it's considered a shvur shav, because there's no way a human being cannot last for 3 days without sleep. Therefore, malkinos, we give him malkus for swearing a false shvur, v'yishan la'alter, and then he can sleep right away. In other words, we don't tell him, try as much as possible to keep your neder until you can't stay awake anymore, and then you're allowed to break it. Once we give him malchus and we say it was a false shvur, then he doesn't have to keep anything at all. So the point is that a person can't live for 3 days without sleep. So therefore, the Chachamim are saying, if you see that this person was able to survive like that, then it was mice and nisim, and that's different. So v'rav Meir. So what is your Meir and my timer? So what is your Meir answer to that? So Amar Rav Kahana, kifin agav kifin havu, because there were arches on top of arches inside the water. So in other words, under the water, there were structures that he could stand on. So therefore, he'd be able to nap briefly here and there during the 3 days. V'rabbanan, the Chachamim answer back to that, d'shisha havu, those structures were made out of marble, so they're slippery. So if a person tries to stand on them, he's going to slip right off. So he wouldn't be able to sleep on them. Rameyer answers back to that. He says, "Ef shiboy masrich b'nayim poter." Still, inevitably, he'd be able to hold himself strongly to them for a little bit and be able to cat nap for a minute or two, and that's enough. When we say that shvur shleish and shleish yamim means the person is saying, "I'm not going to sleep at all." Here, he'd be able to take brief naps here and there, even standing on slippery things like that, and therefore, Rameyer is assuming that he could have survived without mice and missing. Since we're talking about somebody that fell into the yama, into the burag bottle, so the Gemara tells another story involving with that, a famous story. It happened with the daughter of Nechunya Choyfer Shichin. So he's mentioned in Shkolim as one of the officials of the Bais Mikdash. His job was to dig pits in the ground for water, to be able to supply water for the Oilerek. So that was his profession, was digging ditches and cisterns like that. So his daughter, Shenofla Bor HaGadol, so his daughter fell into the Bor HaGadol, and it was too big for her to be able to get out herself. They came and informed Reb Chanina Mendoza to ask him to daven for her, because they had no way of being able to reach down and get her out, and she herself couldn't get out. During the first hour, he told them it's peace. She can still be alive, so you don't have to worry. Shnia Omalahem Shalom, the second hour also. Shlishis Omalahem also, the third hour, she couldn't possibly live that long in the water. So he tells her she actually came out. As the Gemara is going to explain soon, he knew that it's not going to happen. Hashem is not going to allow it to happen, that she would drown in there. Therefore, by the time you reach the point where she couldn't possibly be alive in the water anymore, then he knew it had to be Hashem got her out.
Third hour,
Amala biti mihelcha. So he asks her afterwards, "My daughter, who brought you out of the water?" Amraloi, she says to him, "Zocher shorachelim nizdamli." I saw a ram. Rachelim are female sheep. So a zocher shorachelim is a ram, representing the ram representing the ram that was brought as a korban instead of Yitzhak. The Zokin Manhigar, and there was an old man leading it, the old man representing Avram. So he pulled me out. That it symbolizes, in other words, that her father had been doing chesed for the people and providing them with water, and therefore in the schus of that she was saved. Marsha brings in particular, her father was Nechon Yechoy Feshichen, we're saying the ditch degree. So Maharshal explains, in other words, that the schus of the Akedah, we know in general, when there's a time of tzara, that Rashi brings on the pasuk that Hashem yira, means that Hashem will always see the Akedah and forgive the Jewish people and save them. So this is an example of that, where she was actually saved in the schus of the Akedah. Maharshal brings that Tosfos elsewhere in Shas, in Bava Kamma, the story is also brought. Tosfos brings from Yerushalmi that actually the Malach was in the image of Rav Chanina ben Dosa. Anyway, so Omer lo noviata. They asked him, "Are you a novi that you know she's going to get out safely?" Omer lahem lo novi anoichi v'lei ben novi anoichi ella. But I knew dovashat tzaddik misasik by yitoshal by zaroi. Should the very thing that the tzaddik is involved with it and working so hard on it to dig these pits for people to have water, should his own descendants be stumble through it and die through it? So I knew that not. I knew Hashem doesn't do that way. And therefore, I knew she was going to be safe. Some of the Mephoshim actually learn is that it's not necessarily, as the Gemara is going to say in a second, the fact is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu medakdik im tzaddik im b'chutz hayira. So there's a different explanation. It's not that he's saying, I knew for a fact, but he was davening to Hashem on that basis. How could it be that Dabashat Sadik Misasik, and since he knew that his tefillahs are very well accepted by Hashem, then therefore he knew that she'll be safe. So Omer Rav Abba, Afa Ken Mes Bnei Bat Sama. Nevertheless, still Nechunya Choyfa Shichen's son died of thirst. Shenema, because we have a pasuk that says Sviva Nisara Ma'od, around Hashem is very Nisara. The simple meaning of Nisara is stormy, but the Gemara is doubting it. Meloshin Chota Saira, Meloshin a hair's breadth, meaning Melamed Shachodesh Baruch Hu Medakim Sviva Chota Saira. So Hashem is very particular with those who are close to Him, to the tzaddikim, even to a hair's breadth. So Tosfos explains, in other words, like this. When it was Nechunya Choyfa Shichen's daughter in the pit, that's the actual pit that her father dug. So therefore, that she should drown in the water that her father made available to the, that her father made available to the tzibur, so that he says is not going to happen. But here, it's the other way around. The son died from a lack of water. So therefore, that's not considered davish and isasik by tzaddik. This is the opposite. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu medakdik im tzaddikim kachot asayra. There is actually another explanation that says that when do we say that davish and isasik by tzaddik yikasher by zaray is only if he's doing it 100% l'shem shemayim. So it might be when he was originally digging the pits, he was doing it purely l'shem shemayim, but maybe afterwards, at some point, a little bit of self-interest crept in over there, and he being a tzaddik, then Hashem judged him very strongly for that. Rav Chanina Omer Mehocha, Rav Chanina says, you can see the same thing from a different pasuk also in Tehillim. Keil Naratz Besoid Kedoshim Rabba, Hashem who was exalted among the secret great secret gathering of the holy ones, the Noda al Kol Svivav, and Hashem is awesome over all those who are around him. Again, expressing the idea that the tzaddikim who are around Hashem, who are close to Hashem, they were judged much more strictly than the average person. So therefore, the average person, whatever it is that they did wrong, wouldn't have gotten that their son passes away of thirst. But Nechunya Choy for Shichen, being that he was a tzaddik, then he's judged more strictly like that. Mishnah continues, Afilu shama min anoshim omres mes ish ploini, even if a person hears from women, these women aren't intending to give eders. They're just saying in conversation, it's called mesiach hafiturman, and they're saying that ploini died, daya, then that's enough, and you allow, and the aid can now, based on that hearsay, go and testify in front of Beis Din and allow the man's wife to be married. Rabbi Yehuda goes further. Even if he hears from children who are saying, we're going to go to mourn and to bury Pliny, so even though it's only children, nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that's good enough for us to say that you can give aiders on that behalf that the man is actually dead. And so all of this applies whether the person intends to give aiders, or like in these examples where they're not intending, they're just the kids are playing around or the women are talking among themselves. The Mishnah continues. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava Omer. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava says it depends. Be Yisrael afkishu miskaven. When it's a Yisrael, then we can accept his eidos, even if he's intending to give eidos, because we don't suspect the Yid is going to lie about such things. But Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava says, if it was a goy and he means to say it explicitly, as eidos, then we don't accept it because we say that a goy might be deliberately lying in order to cause them to cause
trouble. Why would they lie?
They might lie because they, first of all, they don't understand the importance of, they don't understand the importance of hilchos issues for us. They think, okay, you know, think of, for example, in goyish law. You have, for example, in American law, if a person is missing for 7 years, then he's presumed dead. And they allow his estate can be taken over by his heirs, his wife can be married without facing charges of bigamy, etc. So you may well have
this contrary to Jerusalem.
Yeah. So in other words, so you may have the goy says that he's dead, he might deliberately be lying, he might be basing himself.
But even if not, though,
he might be basing himself on circumstantial evidence, which is not solid enough up yalacha. But if he's messiah lafituma, if he's not intending to give aiders, then we can accept it.
Oh,
says Rabbi Hodeman
Brother. How does that work with kashrus messiah?
Kashrus is something else entirely. I mean, in general, whenever we talk about Eidos, a goy is possible Eidos, but if they're Messiah Chafitoma, if they're just in casual conversation or something where they say something from which you can deduce something, then often you can rely on it.
Or like, I think, do we use that for whiskey? If whiskey says that it's 100% pure?
I don't know if it works, right? I don't know.
In with Kaven, I do love Mukubalit. Okay.
Right.
Go ahead.
Okay, so the Gemara says, "V'duma loy azli." So now we're saying that the children are saying we're going to mourn for and bury Pliny. Maybe they're not actually going. Maybe they're just talking about what we're going to do. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Dekaamri. No, what the Mishnah means is they're saying, "Harinu boin mi lispoid umi likbar esish Pliny." We're coming back from mourning and from burying
Pliny.
Lispoid means to mourn and to cry and then whatever. Yeah. Nowadays you have a hesped, which is a speech that they give to arouse right. People's emotions. Anyway,
Christian people do that.
No, yeah, right. Tosfos explains, in other words, so the word boyin doesn't mean we're coming to the Leviah, it means we're coming home from the Leviah. So the question is still, maybe these are kids after all. Maybe there's a dead grasshopper or a dead ant. They were playing around with it. They killed it. And they named it Pliny. Kids play like that. Yankel died, where they don't mean Yankel the person. They mean Yankel the grasshopper.
The grasshopper, yeah.
Yeah. So the answer is, Vasikul Alshmei, and they named it by a person's name. So how can you accept that? So the answer is Dekamri, because we're not just talking about that they say that Yankel died. They say Kain v'Kain Rabbonon Habu Hasam. They say there was such and such Chachamim over there at the Levaya. Kain v'Kain Safdani Habu Hasam. There was such and such eulogizers over there. So once they're giving that much detail, it's not play acting. Then we know it means that they're telling, that they're saying actual facts.
For sure.
Yeah. Okay. Now, we said, we said with a goy, if he intends to give eidos, then it's no good. But if it's Messiah, then it's okay. So, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. We said, if the goy is intending to. So the Tanakhama had said that with a goy, it doesn't matter whether. Actually, the Tanakhama hadn't said anything about Jews versus goy.
If he doesn't give intent, then it's okay.
Right. Okay. So Rav Yehuda Ben Baba had said there's a difference between a Jew and a goy in that regard. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, lo shonu ala shneskaven lahatir. That would only apply if he had intention to be matir, the wife to remarry. So then we say he might be doing it maliciously in order, he might know that he's lying and he's figuring she's going to get remarried. And then look at this. I mean, I have a chance to get Jews in trouble.
You really think out to big
time. You never know.
Okay, what? He might be very nice. He might feel bad.
He might feel bad for her, whatever it is.
I don't believe in these laws. Yeah. Anyway, let the woman marry.
Maybe.
He knows that.
Yeah, okay. Go either way. Okay. But if he's actually saying, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that if he actually intends to give eidos, then it would be valid eidos. Now that's not the halacha, we'll see further, but right now that's what we're saying. So how do we know whether he's intending to give eidos or not? Amar Rav Yosef, it depends. Bala Beis Din, if the goy comes to Beis Din, he says, Pliny is dead, let his wife remarry. Zehu niskaven lahatir, that means that he's trying to be matir. So then, yeah, you have the possibilities. Either he's doing it maliciously, knowing that the man is not dead and he's going to get the woman in trouble. Or like you said, Aaron, that maybe on the contrary, maybe he feels bad. So he's going to use weak evidence, circumstantial evidence or whatever that wouldn't be acceptable, lahalacha, and then say.
But if he doesn't know anything about remarried or not remarried,
that's
okay.
What he's saying.
I died or not died.
Right, he's saying, I see you as history. Mes stam, on the other hand, if he says just plain, the man died, zon iskaven la'edos, then that would mean that he intends to give edos, that the man is dead, and then we deduce from that, that it means his wife is mutter, such a thing we'll accept.
Perfect.
Itma, nami omer ishlokish lo shonu elosh niskaven lahatir. That would be Rish Lakish, says the same thing, only if he has in mind to be matir the woman. I'm going to scab in the hoid, I just say Eidus. Amalei Rabbi Yechanan, but Rabbi Yechanan says to Rish Lakish, how could you say that? Loi kach hoya maise ba'oshia berebi. Didn't it happen with Oshia berebi? Berebi is often, in the Gemara, means a great Tamil Chacham. So we're talking about Reb Oshia, the famous Uli Amorin of Oshia. She hitiram im chamisho shmonim skenim, where he was matir, such a case, together with 85 other chachamim. On the side of it, here it says it's supposed to be not shehitiram, but shehitris, means that he argued with 85 chachamim on this point and was going to allow it. That he tells them, lo shanu al shenisgavin lahatir, avin eskavin lahoid lahidus eidus, v'loi hoidu loi chachamim. But Rabbi Yochanan says, the other, the 85 chachamim, did not agree with Rabbi Yochanan on that. So Elam Basnissin to Katani over Oid Kachavim, Haimaskavin, Edus Edus, Hechemashkafasla. Well, then how do we explain the distinction in our Mishnah? If you're telling me that even that any time he means to say Edus, then it's no good. So what does the Mishnah mean that if he said that if he's not intending Edus, then it's fine? It would mean, but Messiah Lafitumai. It would mean when he's Messiah Lafitumai, when he's saying something, he's not intending to give Edus at all. He's saying something from which we can deduce that this person is dead. And we'll continue with examples of that tomorrow, Bez Hashem, where he's not saying, he's not coming to Beis Din at all, and he's not saying Eidus at all. He's saying something, and from it we can deduce. There was a machlokas Rishonim, there was a machlokas Aposkim within that. Does it have to be that he's saying it like as part of a longer description of something, and then in the middle of it, he mentions almost like incidentally that the person is dead, or is it even good enough? He's saying the point by itself, but he's not saying it in a form of Eidus, but rather like in a form of telling something that happened. So we'll talk about that more tomorrow.
It's again. Just like a police report. You know, some Goyish policeman is giving a report. He says he saw this, and that, and that, that.
Right.
You know, there's no reason for him to lie. You know, he's doing his duty. He's a police officer. And that's taken as evidence also in American court.
Right. But here we're saying that with a Goy, you need Messiah Lafitumai. Now, again, you have a huge discussion among the Rishonim and Achronim about the exact parameters of that. And there are some times where we say to a certain extent that a certain amount of Goyish evidence is valid. I was mentioning before, for example, a Truva about the Titanic. One of the points made over there is you have a ship's manifest that lists everybody who was on the ship. That was written by Goyim. The pursers and whatever there are Goyim. And still such evidence that he was on the ship. And that he's not in the list of, and he's not in the list of survivors that were published afterwards in the newspapers. So such evidence is to a certain extent acceptable in halacha and other similar examples. So it's not a blanket statement, but the point is we have to be careful with goyish eidos, and we'll talk about that more tomorrow, Bez Hashem, and we'll Bez Hashem finish the masechta tomorrow. And
okay,
everyone.